Woke everyone up. Thank you all very much for being. Oh, you turned me down.
Partially deaf here. I can hear you clearly. So
I hate being turned down. Whoa, hello. It's been one of those panels today. So we've been doing this 10 rules of dealing police encounters for about a decade now, in various incarnations with the busted viewing before that. And I am very proud to say that I've never had any police officers complain or have anything negative to say.
I'll be the first
about doing that. Quite the opposite. We've obviously had a number of police officers on the panel with us. But when I heard about the Dick Heller video, I thought it was going to make an excellent view on this. Not that we're showing different sides of the coin, but I think that we've got lights coming from different angles illuminating the exact same issue. And I think it's going to provide a very beneficial look at the topic, especially in light of what just happened yesterday in Texas. And of course, it's in Texas. But still, I think I couldn't have had a more timely one. So, you know that you have idiot friends who need to be in this room for both of these videos, and especially for the 10 rules of police encounters. You still have time to text them and tweet them. It could be the most valuable thing they will ever have. We've definitely had people come up to us after they've had these viewings to thank us because it did help them out later on. And we appreciate all of you being here, but you know very well it's your idiot friends who need to be in this room. So tweet it out, yell at them. Remember to rate us, join the EFF forums, everywhere they are. And I'm also going to have Patrick talk a little about Dick Heller, and then we'll get started.
Cool. Hey, guys. My name is Patrick Shaver, and I'm a documentary filmmaker. I'm also a former Atlanta police officer. I became a documentary filmmaker back in 2013 when I started to take on a kind of a heavy topic. One of my friends had been involved in a shooting as a police officer, and I kind of wanted to show the world what I was seeing in my friend as he was dealing with the aftermath of that incident, and that led to my first film. Now, when I finished that one, I was looking for another project to get involved in that I was really passionate about, and the Dink Heller dash cam was something that had stayed with me from the time that I was a police recruit in the Atlanta Police Academy. Can I just ask by show of hands, who in here has seen the Dink Heller dash cam video? A couple people. You may have seen it, and you might not remember, but just to refresh your memory really quickly, a deputy pulls over a man on the side of the road. The man goes into his truck and gets a rifle, and the deputy tells him again and again and again and again to put the gun down. It ends up in the deputy dying and being shot and killed. So in order to make this movie, I went to Kyle's family and I said I'd like to make a documentary about who he was. And along the way, we learned some things about Kyle Dink Heller that had sort of been lost to the ages. This was meant to be a short film. It was meant to be 15 to 30 minutes in the short film category. In the end, it ended up being an 88-minute film, and that's because of what happened at the end of the film, or what happened at the original end of the film. You folks will all get to see that today. So I really appreciate being here tonight as part of this and being able to present. Thank you.
Oh, we will have discussion after both movies are done and be glad to take any questions then.
More effectively. So a few of the things, again, in Georgia, you do need to positively identify yourself. The laws are not clear on whether you have to show an ID or not. It hasn't gone that far up the courts to determine how you have to identify yourself. So the second thing is, if a cop gives you an order, even if it's one you don't want to obey, we generally recommend following their order. Just keep that, from escalating the situation. One of the things we used to show in this video was if you're pulled over, just roll down the window a little bit so the police can't then have less basis to say they smelled something and that's the reason for their search. But on the other hand, a police officer asks you to roll down the window, we generally recommend you obey what they have ordered you to do. All right.
Although I do have questions, like if they tell you sit down and cross your legs, do you have to do that? I mean, seriously.
Depends which skirt I'm wearing.
Yeah, okay. So if you're wearing a skirt and it's a short skirt, less than I happen to have on a short skirt, and that would be, I don't know, revealing. Do I have to do that?
If a police officer asks you to sit down and cross your legs, it's essentially so that you have less of an opportunity to get up.
Right.
Yeah, pick the mic. Pick the mic.
Sorry.
Not to us. To the audience.
Thank you, sir. So when a police officer asks you to sit down and cross your legs, it's essentially so that you have less of an opportunity to get up and run away, because a lot of times people that police officers deal with may be thinking about running away, and if you cross your legs, it just provides one extra step for that police officer. If you've got a concern like that, though, you could certainly say that to the police
officer. Okay, I had on 4-inch heels and very short skirt, so chances are I'm not running far.
All right, who's got the box for the questions? Scott, who's got the question box? All right, do we have questions in the audience? I know a few of you had issues and concerns from earlier parts of the video you'd like us to get into. All right, first question, sir. Oh, Booker T's used these a million times.
How do I make the box work?
That's a microphone.
Oh, good until the box didn't
work. Patrick, did they ever find that apology letters from the guy?
Did they find the M1?
They did find the M1. The M1 was inside of his cabin when they went in the woods.
No. Did they find the apology letter?
The apology letter. Okay. We were unable to find the apology letter, and I did go to the man who had reportedly been given the apology letter. I put it up on screen, only showed for a moment. He said it may or may not have happened, or essentially it had been so long that he couldn't remember.
Yeah, one interesting thing to remember in Georgia is that the sheriffs are elected, and in parts of Georgia, especially rural Georgia, they are the powers in the county. We've definitely had I've reported on them when it's a reporter. Very interesting. I ran into a few years after I've been reporting about one sheriff who ended up finally getting run out and convicted for various misdeeds. I ran into an ATF agent who had also been investigating him at the same time I've been doing it for the Daily Report here in Atlanta. And his stories were well beyond the ones I had about the sheriff. So sheriff positions are always kind of interesting, especially in rural Georgia. Box over that way.
Owie, owie.
You saw a question?
In Michigan, that's where I'm from.
Hold that against us.
The sheriffs are accountable to your governor. Here in Georgia, are they accountable to the governor, or are they their own, as being the fact that they're elected, are they an independent entity?
So we have an issue in DeKalb County right now where our sheriff got into trouble, ran from a cop, essentially, in Piedmont Park. And it is the governor who's going to make the final decision about his status. However, they are accountable to us as the electorate. They are elected positions. They're not appointed.
It's the same way in Michigan, but the
governor... Talk in the box, if you would.
Why am I talking in the box? I speak loud.
In Michigan, yeah, the sheriffs are elected, you know, by the citizenry, but the governor can suspend them for misconduct. He can basically suspend them indefinitely until the next election.
That's right. And
like the governor can be like, yeah, you did something wrong, so you're technically not the sheriff right now.
My understanding is it doesn't have to be convicted or anything like that. They can say there's been misconduct, and then they can suspend them.
Yep.
It is, especially in Georgia, it is something that the governor is going to use very rarely because those sheriffs are elected, have a real strong basis in the electorate, and are a power force. And the Georgia Sheriff's Association is a very powerful group. We've had sheriffs sit on this panel with us before who will tell you exactly that.
Sheriffs are usually constitutional.
Right.
Constitutional.
Right. They are
in
the state constitution. What they are and what they can do is in the state constitution.
One thing I want to bring up, and I don't know that this would have made a difference in this particular situation, is something that has changed in the face of the police world is they brought up CITs in the police world. They're called crisis intervention teams, and they are trained specifically to deal with people with mental health issues, such as this individual who had PTSD.
I thought you meant us.
Yeah, well, you're a special case. again, they're specifically trained to deal with people with mental health issues, and I don't know that that would have made a difference with this particular individual, but hopefully something they'll be able to help in the future.
And if I could just add to that, just from my own experience, I am a crisis intervention trained officer. In that specific situation, I don't believe that that would have made a difference. In other ones, yes. And that one, because he was actively combative and actively resisting, and backup was coming to the scene, it was downhill.
Well, speaking to the issue they were talking about, first of all, they had a similar incident in Broward County, Florida. When it came to the incident in Parkland, the Broward County Sheriff, this was the most preventable tragedy in history, debatably. Most people would say it was the most preventable tragedy in history. And most of the fault there was from the Broward County Sheriff, Sheriff Scott Israel at the time. The governor removed him for dereliction of duty, and essentially he was an accessory to mass murder. Legally, that's debatable, but morally, he was an accessory to mass murder because not only did his deputies not go in, it took a lot to get a lot of evidence. They had a grand jury investigation, but basically, his deputies didn't go in. They let the students die. They never confronted the shooter, never arrested him until he was not even on the scene anymore. In fact, he went and was able to go out of the school, go get Subway, and then they arrested him in a neighborhood nearby hours later. On top of that, they had already had it written to them, and this is what, just to give you an idea how much it takes to get a sheriff removed. On top of that, they also told the Broward County Sheriff about this kid and how he had specifically threatened, as well as the FBI, who didn't act either, that he had threatened to shoot up the school, and specifically said, gave out details and everything. Broward Sheriff again failed to act to prevent it, and then let it happen and did not intervene. In fact, some of the students let their guards down, and you know, kind of, when they saw the sheriffs arrive, they're like, "Oh shit, we're saved, we're good. We can kind of, you know, they're going to save us." Only to be killed, because in the end, he only stopped because his gun jammed. So he put it down and ran off and was able to escape because the police didn't do their job. And they had 8 deputies on scene during the shooting that just sat there and let the kids die. On another thing, I think one thing that does come up also that wasn't discussed in this video is the when it comes to in bad neighborhoods in Florida, particularly Tampa. Because I live near Tampa, Dade City's not that bad, but except parts of it, there's parts where the dollar store has to have bars on the window. So that part is different, but there's certain parts where I carry a weapon. I'm licensed in the state of Florida to do so, and I do armed security for work. So I think one thing that people need to know is how to do that. And then my question more specifically when dealing with law enforcement with a firearm would be, if they know that you have a firearm and you tell them, because I always tell them, does that give them the right to search your vehicle?
So I can tell you, in Georgia, by the way, my name's Jonathan.
Oh, we need to do the introduction.
I work as a certified law enforcement officer in Georgia. I've been on a job for about 13 years. Spent 8 years on patrol and as a field trainer. And the last 5, I work special victims investigations. I investigate crimes against children and part of state and federal task force for internet crimes and human trafficking investigations. So, I can talk to you about Georgia. I don't know Florida laws, but no, having a firearm on your person does not allow a Georgia officer in Georgia to search your vehicle. They can provide you with reasonable instructions. As a trainer, what I would tell recruits to do typically in those situations that it's on a traffic stop is to give you reasonable commands like, hey, during the traffic stop, please keep your hands on the steering wheel and don't move them anywhere else unless I specifically tell you to. Unless there is suspicion of a crime, there generally is not a legal reason to remove the weapon from your person or to confiscate it for any reason. But it's very situation dependent.
Yeah, in Florida, I know they do have the right to remove it. They do have the right to remove it. But my question is, can they say, well, you know, what if the officer says, okay, well, I see you have this gun, but what if there's some guns you're not telling me about? Can I search your vehicle? You have to let them.
The bar federally for a frisk, yeah, pat down of you or your vehicle is reasonable articulable suspicion that you are armed and dangerous. Both of those conditions have to be met, both armed and dangerous, which means that if you are a law-abiding citizen, and you have a weapon on you, you meet one of those conditions, but you don't meet the other one necessarily. However, if something else is going on that provides reasonable suspicion that there's something dangerous about you or the situation, then that could in fact facilitate a frisk of you and or your vehicle. Again, it's very fact or situation dependent.
And the rule of thumb is, if they have to ask to search your car, then they need your consent. And they might not, they might feel a probable cause, but you can still assert your rights, and then they will search, and then your lawyers will try and get anything found suppressed as a motion. So if they're asking, and even if they're not asking, you say, everybody, I don't consent to any searches. All right, next question. I guess we should do introductions. Patrick, you want to introduce yourself?
I think I've already given one, but I can give some.
I was sort of surprised to hear about the fact that they stated in the film that there was a law that you had to stop for lights and siren or whatever, and notice that you're expected to pull over or get out of the way. And I was very surprised that the person that didn't do that seemed to think that they were going to get away with that. Now, granted, if we're talking about a rural area in some states, maybe they think they can get away with that. But I felt that that was sort of like exceeding believability. Do they routinely do that in that county? Just not stop and keep going? I mean, somehow that didn't add up.
That was a situation where that gentleman, if it happened the way that it was explained to me, that gentleman needed to stop. Absolutely.
Okay.
The gentleman on the traffic stop with the apology.
Oh.
Yes, that gentleman, and I have to say if, because of the evidence that we were able to find, it's essentially stories from 20 years ago, that gentleman had a legal requirement to stop.
Okay, because I would think that almost nobody in the world, any place, and particularly in America, would think that they could get away with that, although we all know...
The way that was described in the film, it sounded more like the person didn't follow the move-over law, basically, and was blocking the lane of travel. I can tell you, having used emergency equipment on Interstate 75, which, if you're not from here, is a major interstate. I've been doing 90 miles an hour trying to get to an emergency in the hammer lane and had somebody lock their brakes on when they noticed the sound of the lights in the back and cause all kinds of problems. So that kind of thing certainly happens all the time. That's what it sounded like. Was that they just didn't get out of the way.
It started with that, and then the deputy followed him for a period of time afterwards. But absolutely, in Georgia, you do have the move-over law. If you see a police car stopped at the side of the road,
That's current.
Yes. I have a question here, which I'm going to put this as sort of one theme here, although I admit that what I'm asking about may be different circumstances. In the second film, whenever the police officers were visiting the elderly woman and dealing with the issue about a police right to search someone's house or apartment or something, does the law change if you do not own the building yourself? Like, say you live in an apartment, or you are a college student in a dormitory, or something along those lines. Do you lose any rights to refuse to consent to a search under those circumstances?
So, what happened with her situation was that she was living in Section 8 housing. Okay. So, she allowed the police to come in. They found contraband in her house, and so the Section 8 housing, the eligibility, was taken away from her because of the contraband that was found in her house. So it wasn't necessarily that the law, her ability to refuse the police to come in, was different. It was that her benefits were taken away because of the contraband that was found in her house.
And police aren't supposed to try and figure out if you own it or rent it or what. If they have been given permission, they're going to come on in, which is why if you're having a party, you keep an eye on who's doing both front and back door, because any idiot can give a police officer permission to come on in. And if the question is the owner versus the renter, you still have, and this is where the lawyers start piling up levels of defense, but you are still considered to have protection in your home, and where you're renting is your home. Some of the other issues we deal with, for instance, in car stops, police have a plain view rule, so generally anything that you're at all concerned about goes in the trunk. For any of you who are involved in alternative lifestyles, your play bag goes in the trunk or in the back.
That's not just your car, baby. That's your house.
Out of sight. If it is considered a rape kit, it's considered a rape kit. So those kind of things get put where they're not going to cause you issues. And the plain view rule we kind of touched on, and it's important with the house searches, if an officer looks in and sees something in plain view, i.e. someone tied up to your couch or end table or whatever, they then have a reasonable suspicion to come on in with or without a warrant. So, and the same is true in the car. And there's another rule for cars, and it's not as official as the plain view rule. It's kind of the arm's reach rule. Police are going to be more comfortable with things that are out of your arm's reach than things that are within your arm's reach.
With the idea of like a college dorm and all that kind of stuff, you have the right, you have an expectation of privacy in your own personal spaces. And so you could be in a situation where you're renting a room in a house. The owner or another renter in the home could provide consent to enter shared spaces, right? But if you have a room that is just your room, especially if there's a lock and key on it, and some of this can get into particulars once you go to court, if you go to court. But generally speaking, a space that is yours, even in a communal living environment like a dorm or a rental house, is still yours, and you would have to give consent. Or let's say I were taking a warrant out to search your stuff, I would have to specify I'm going to your room in that house.
Yep.
And I would have to describe where your room is in that house.
Okay.
And that it is your room and it's not anybody else. You know what I mean? So you have that expectation of privacy. Just because the owner of the home lets the police in doesn't mean that they get to just walk into your bedroom, because you have a right, you have a reasonable expectation of privacy to your space in those in that home.
Okay. Thank you.
Just to speak to his issue, because this is this was discussed in school. I'm actually a criminal justice major, and the thing that does come up is, like in Florida, there is a way around it. In Florida, if you have a student that is suspected of having a firearm, the school resource officer or something, and in gun-free zones, this comes up. The school resource officer still has to have probable cause, but he can get an administrator that works at the school to do the search, and he can sit there in case there is a gun and to deal with it. You can have any civilian do it. In fact, I used to do port security. I'm eventually going into law enforcement, but I used to do port security, and I think, and that's why they hire us, because as private citizens, to a large extent, you don't have the same regulations as law enforcement when it comes to searching people and whatnot.
You get into color of law issues, though, but it would depend on the situation.
Yeah. Well, that's what we do, is at the port, they have the right to refuse a search by a security officer, but in so doing, they lose their right to be on the property. So what we did is, a police officer can't say, you have to get off this property that I patrol unless you consent to a search, but a security officer can. He can say, well, we're gonna have the police trespass you then if you don't consent to this search, and that's what we did at the Port of Tampa.
And let's touch on this very quickly for everyone. There are times when you lose that right to not consent if you want access to an area, so borders are one very obvious one. If you want to cross a border, get on a plane, you are basically consenting to be searched. If you want to enter a stadium for a concert, and they're searching for alcohol, you can stop before you go through the checkpoint. But once you're going through, you're being searched.
If you're within 100 miles of a national border port, they're able to pull you over and search your car.
But we don't think they're allowed to search your electronics. So that's a whole nother question of don't use your thumbprint for your phone. I'll get into that one a little bit more.
Could you elaborate?
Security for your electronic devices. Bizarrely, biometrics are not really protected. your thumbprint is not a protected. A pin, you do not have to give a police officer the pin to your laptop, your phone, or whatever. You don't have that same right necessarily on your thumbprint, your retina, etc. And this is still going through the courts, so don't expect a cop to hold you down to show your retina to the screen. But if they can get access with your thumbprint, then they're in, and your lawyer's ability to suppress that is dramatically reduced than if they had a pin that they beat out of you or whatever.
However, your constitutional rights do not stop at the border.
That's true. That's true. You don't have to go through TSA.
And you may have difficulty getting your computer to not work that way. That facial thumbprint, you may find it very difficult to turn that off or impossible.
Right, that's true. That is true. And again, we've had questions about ICE in the past. You do not lose your rights necessarily just because you are in some level of immigrant status to the U.S., but there are varying levels at that point to be worried about.
Just a quick question to elaborate, well, actually two questions. Elaborate more about that pin. So if you are stopped by the police, you have your phone locked by a pin, can you be compelled to give out the pen or
That is considered a search again, and you do not have to testify against yourself. You have to affirmatively assert your right to remain silent. You have to verbally say, you have to make it clear, I am going to remain silent, I want to speak to a lawyer. And then you don't give him anything until your lawyer's around, your lawyer says do it.
You don't need to say all that, I plead the fifth.
No, ma'am.
Get me a lawyer.
True. But you do have to affirmatively assert your right to remain silent. It's bizarre, but you have to make noise that you're going to be silent.
And if you're in Louisiana, make sure you ask for a lawyer and not a lawyer dog.
A lawyer.
I don't know, I want a lawyer dog. Somebody said, no, I want a lawyer dog, as in...
Yeah, the lines you saw are serious. Use those lines. There's a reason for those. Those are tested in courts, and those are upheld. Those
so
have been gone all the way up.
Not giving your PIN, by the way, doesn't prevent... So I work a ton of cases where phones are highly relevant, child porn, all kinds of stuff.
Right.
And if we have reason to believe there's evidence on a phone or a device or whatever, we'll seize it. We'll get a search warrant to have it digitally forensically analyzed, and a fair portion of the time, even without a pin, we can crack it, you know, or our DFIs will crack it and get access to the content and stuff. I can't compel people to give me their pin or their access codes. With a search warrant, I can potentially get their thumbprint or the retina, you know. But that doesn't change the ability of the officers to get a search warrant for the contents if there is probable cause that a crime's been committed and that that's evidence of that crime. It just might change the ways that the information on the device gets accessed.
Or to guess how you get in. So if you've got a greasy finger and you're doing one of these zigzags, clean your nasty screen up.
So, yeah, one way, I guess, to make it...
Close to your mouth.
One way to make it, for you, to deactivate those things, most phones, you power them off. And if you power them back on, they require a password instead of a biometric. So that's one way if you're concerned.
Put it up to your mouth.
Yeah,
but the problem is that...
Now you're not even using the mic.
You gotta
have time to power down. And if you're in a situation, powering down is nice. The other thing is, here's the other issue, if you're using your phone to record, completely legal, you're not necessarily powering down quickly. And there are services so you can record without access to your phone, but not everyone's gonna be using those, so.
The only case that I'm familiar with that I think he's talking about is when you turn your computer off and you turn it back on, you will still have the option of either a pin or the facial or the thumb or whatever, and to completely remove the facial or the thumb access is apparently very difficult.
I was talking specifically about a phone.
Yeah, no, so what he was saying is that basically iPhones and most of the Androids now, if you power them down and they come back on, the biometric isn't how you can get into it. You have to put the code in. And on computers, it's usually a setting. I mean, it's not terribly...
Well, I've done a little research on it, and what I've learned is that it's apparently very difficult to completely remove that feature.
I've never had it. I can't talk to that.
Here's the easiest answer. Don't do anything illegal on your phones. Or get a burner.
You've heard.
And toss it.
You got skipped.
You got, what was your criticism?
I was just going to... Oh, I can Monday morning quarterback this all night long. I'm a retired police officer. But I just figured for everybody else in the room, you might want to touch on exigent circumstance and spontaneous admission. So I've had people over here, me and my partners, talking about, you know, hey, this guy did that. He goes, yeah, motherfucker, I did that. Well, we don't have to read you your rights.
No, and then they mentioned that.
Out.
There's no, yeah, this is...
At these points,
you
don't
have your rights, sir. These things will hold up.
Yeah.
You say something stupid to a cop, it's in court.
Yeah.
You say something smart to a cop, it can be used in court against you.
If research is easier, you might want to touch on exigent circumstance. There are circumstances where, you know, you can force your way into a house without a warrant.
Sure, and one of those circumstances, just for people in the room, would be hot pursuit. Now, we've all heard the term hot pursuit, but all hot pursuit means is that I'm following you, my eyes didn't leave you, and I followed you into a dwelling. Even if you just shut that door right behind me and I bust it open because we're in the midst of a foot chase and you're right there, that's hot pursuit. That's exigent circumstances.
It doesn't have to be, they could be going into your house and you're not the one they're pursuing. Same is also true for imminent danger. It doesn't have to be the homeowner people in the house who are causing the imminent danger.
Firefighters also have back doors in the homes through the fire codes and everything else. To my brother's
fire. Her brother's a fire chief.
So they have means of being able to get
into
the
fire. And if someone sees something in your house and they report it,
right?
You're giving them probable cause, and then the warrant's an easier thing. How are we doing on time? 5 minutes?
While the advice of I'd like to speak to an attorney or a lawyer is good, you need to have it so it's not indeterminate. You need to request an attorney right now. Because
that's a good point. This has come up in more recent courts.
Has been found as a waiver.
Yeah, this is a very good point that you do want to put a time on it, not just I want to talk to my attorney, and they'll come back to you and come back to you and come back to you, and eventually be getting answers.
You don't want to be wishy-washy either. I think I might need an attorney. It's not the same as I want an attorney.
Again, and the right now is a good addition. There have been questions about that in the courts.
Sometime in the future. And indeterminately, I would like that one.
Yeah, the time issue has definitely popped up.
I'd like to add to that. There's a really interesting case out of Georgia, actually. Giselle Gissendaner, who had requested an attorney, and then they questioned her later, and a confession was actually tossed out because she had previously asked for an attorney, and that was a murder of, I believe it was her husband, right? Giselle Gissendaner. Really great case to look up to and see exactly when the attorney was requested, how it was requested, and what they did next.
But again, all of these are layers of defense, and you're just building up layers of defense.
What was that last name, Giselle?
Gissendaner. G-I-S-S-E-N-D-A-N-E-R.
With the fingerprint thing, another thing that may come up, which I was wondering about, is for my license to work security in Florida, as well as my carry permit for the bad neighborhoods, that you inevitably have to go to living in a small town outside the big city that doesn't have anything there but trees. when you go, so both of those require that you give your fingerprints to the state of Florida and have them on file with Florida Department of Law Enforcement. So I guess I don't know if there's a way to do this with current technology, but could they take those fingerprints you gave them for your license and use them to open your phone if you have a fingerprint setting?
That'd be awesome.
People have used fingerprints found, on cups and the like to fill the biometric.
But would it be legal for the police to do that?
I don't see why not.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, there are different hospitals now that are requiring biometrics to check in. So, in theory,
yeah, they could probably
use
that.
Uncle Sam has fingerprints everywhere and can do whatever they want when they want. So,
I would imagine. I don't know. We've never had that come up in our office, or to my knowledge, in our county. And I work in Metro Atlanta, not for Atlanta, but in Metro Atlanta. You would have to have a search warrant.
Yeah, even to use the fingerprints you have on file to open their
right, phone. Right. I'm not aware of there being any attempts, although now I guess I'd love to try, but plant at the seed. But we'd still require the establishing that there is evidence of a crime, the judge signs off on it. I mean, all of that due process would still need to go into it in order to go that route.
Sure. Well, look at the iPhone face they just had.
Someone get the microphone and say something.
So, could they compel you to give their password without a warrant?
Well, how would they do that?
You never have to testify against yourself.
That's what I'll make sure, yeah.
That would be the Constitution, because they would have to be
a testimony. That's the important thing.
You are going to be silent. That's it. They can't force you to give them a passcode to if you had a mag lock on your house.
That's because they count that as testimony. I mean, the Supreme Court could have said anything they wanted. That's certainly not in the Constitution.
But once you're saying you're going to be silent, you then have to shut up. If you keep talking, you're giving up your right to be silent.
And with that, we have to shut up. Sorry, Andrew. I know you're the moderator, but we have to be done, I think.
Scott, are we getting the hand? Are we getting one more question?
Okay, one more.
All right. Sorry, I meant to say the finger.
So I was going to ask you guys, when you're talking about your password protection and utilizing that, you know, utilizing your protections to, you know, have people not be able to get into your phone, how did that relate then to the iPhone issue that they had, that they just had to litigate in courts so that they actually had to go in and crack it on the backside because the guy wouldn't come up off of his information
He was dead. And they were trying to get access to it, and they were trying to get Apple to give them access to it, essentially.
I missed that part.
They had a warrant to compel Apple to do it. Apple basically.
Right. It was Apple versus the feds.
No, or we can't. And then it was that the process was surrounding that issue.
Boy, have I had a story about that.
So
we did a panel on that 2 years ago.
Yep. So yeah, whole different, related but different issue. They were not trying to get the suspect to give up anything. All right, well, thank you all very much. Rate this scene. Everyone who's left in here, we need your rating this one.